Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Energy in Action. I think everyone is going to be all ears on this topic because we all seem to have so many questions about diet and nutrition, and there's information all over the board for anyone out there, not just those in the mitochondrial disease community. I feel so fortunate to be joined today by Donna DeVito, who is a dietitian, and she is with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And this is going to be the first of several times you hear from Donna. We've broken it up into different topics, and today we are tackling weak muscles and fatigue and how diet can help. Welcome, Donna. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Of course. I am really looking forward to learning myself and to be able to share the information with our community. So it is such a great honor to have you. There's so few people, it feels like, in your dietitian community that know enough about mitochondrial disease to be able to talk about, you know, the two together. So while we know that there's so many different kinds of mitochondrial disease, and they affect us in so many ways, I think one big thing in common is weak muscle and fatigue. So we are going to talk about how that affects us overall in terms of diet, and we're going to just get right into it. I am so excited to learn. I have been itching for more information on this topic for a very long time. So, Donna, what can we do with our daily eating habits to improve these classic yet horrible symptoms? Can focusing on diet help? Can it slow down some of these symptoms that we're seeing progress in our bodies? What do you think?
Well, the first thing that I think about when I meet someone who says to me, I don't feel so strong. I feel a little weak. My number one question that I ask myself is, are you eating enough? Enough nutrition. And, you know, one thing when I started with working with people that have mitochondrial disorders is that I noticed a pattern that not everyone was getting enough calories. And it doesn't matter to specific, it does matter what specific type of, you know, calories, obviously, but just not getting enough calories, you don't have enough energy at all to function, basically. So, first is, let's see, I want to assess someone eating enough. And then we could dive into specifics. What do you need for muscle health?
That's so interesting because I feel like in society, we're so focused on, you know, cutting down how much we're eating, especially in America, that our portions are too big and we're taking in too many calories. But for those with mitochondrial disease, it kind of sounds like the opposite, that we need the calories to sustain our muscle health.
I have seen the opposite, because a lot of times when our muscles are weak, we're not able to chew as well, swallow as well. We're just too tired to eat. And then it creates this cycle. You know, it's like the chicken or the egg. Are you tired because you're not eating enough? You know, or are you tired because your muscles are weak? So I think where I come in into someone's life is, let's see if you're eating enough. And that's contributing to weakness overall.
So let's say you're assessing a patient and they are eating enough.
They are eating enough. Okay.
Yeah. They're getting enough calories in their day.
Uh-huh.
So what do you think next?
Next, I dive into specifics. I look at, you're getting enough. And regardless, I still would look into specifics. You know, protein, fat, carbohydrates. But most importantly with mito is antioxidants. And
do you know no one has ever said that to me before?
Huh. Surprising. Okay.
To focus on antioxidants.
Antioxidants. Huh. Yeah. And we've heard this, you know, it's kind of, I think, out there in the news and generically, mm-hmm. you know, eat the rainbow.
Yeah.
We want to
yeah.
eat color. But yeah. it's so important and so true. And it's important for everyone with mito, you know,
for sure.
condition or without. But I've seen people, you know, that it affects so much more profoundly with mito disease. So it's so important, you know, if we're eating a breakfast that, you know, say it's cereal or oatmeal and that's all we eat, you know, okay, then I come in and say, well, let's jazz it up. Let's mm-hmm. add some berries. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not getting enough calories in general, how can we add calories? So like to the oatmeal, maybe we could add a nut butter, you know, a sunflower mm. butter, a mm-hmm. peanut butter, or some other kind of butter to add the calories in there. So,
and that would give us protein too.
And that would give you protein.
Yeah.
So where I come in, I look at what someone eats during the whole day. And if you're not getting enough protein, period, you know, we all have a set amount of protein that we need. Everyone's protein need varies, you know, person to person. But if, say, you're just not eating hardly any protein and you need more protein in your diet, then I say, oh, I think we could sneak some at breakfast time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And chances are, maybe some people have more energy in the morning. And sometimes, a lot of times with mito, you start weaning, your energy decreases as the
For
day
sure.
goes on.
Yeah.
So this is meal planning, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in another episode with the meal planning.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. yeah. But, you know, it's like, let's get in more calories when you have the most energy, you know, time of the day. And then at the end of the day, when we're fatigued, we're going to still eat, but we're going to save the calories or the type of foods and drinks that require less work of chewing, swallowing, et cetera, for the end of the day. So
we might have to be steak eaters for breakfast and not for dinner, huh?
Well, it might not be a bad idea, but we don't have to be steak, you know?
right. I just am thinking of something that is tough for me to chew, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, as a society, I feel like we're all really into protein right now. Mm-hmm. Even my 12-year-old son, he talks about it every day.
Right.
It seems like it is something really to focus on, and it's not just a fat.
Protein, it is important.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want everyone to know, especially with mito, is you don't need to eat more than what your body needs. Do not think of your body as you can eat tons of protein like a bodybuilder and build muscle. You know, we might be born with a genetic condition that our muscles, you know, do not grow as big as, you know, bulk, we say, mass,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, as compared to the norm, you know, and then that might evolve into conditions like muscle weakness called hypotonia, mm-hmm. you know, the muscle.
Something that a lot of people with mitochondrial disease deal with.
So if you have weak muscles, I as a dietitian know that your calories are going to be a little less because our muscles require fuel. We say they're metabolically active. So mm-hmm. they're calorie burning, our muscles. So they need food. They need fuel. You know, our fat stores are not, we say, metabolically active. So we don't need to feed fat. Okay. We need fat. You know, certain amount, not a lot of fat,
mm-hmm.
you know, but when we talks about nutrition, we cannot build extra muscle by eating more protein. And that is a very big misconception that mm-hmm. I have encountered when people come in to see me. Well, I try to eat more protein, but my muscles are still weak. Well, it's a misconception. And I worked very closely with a physical therapist. And the physical therapists measure your muscle strength. And then based on what the physical therapist is measuring, I will see, okay, over time, are these, is this person's muscles getting stronger, weaker, staying the same? Oh, are they eating enough calories? You know, are their muscles getting weaker because they're just not eating enough? Or if that happens, then it could say, oh, you know, if we get canceled and you eat, say, more calories, more, you know, maybe we're adding peanut butter to that oatmeal that I just mentioned, and you need a little extra fat and a little extra calories, then who knows? Maybe when you come back in 6 months and get your muscles tested again, they might be a little better. And we actually published a study a couple years ago that said, yes, it does. That, you know, when we found that half the people that we met in the clinic were not getting a minimum of 75% of their energy, their calories, their energy intake. And that correlated with weaker muscles. So we need to eat enough. So the first job that I do is making sure people come in and meet with me. Are you getting your minimum, your basic nutritional needs? And after that, we take it away and we troubleshoot, but how can we optimize, you know, what you're eating? Let's jazz it up and add those berries.
So why are berries so good for us? Let's just talk about
that. Yeah. High in antioxidants. Antioxidants are, they protect our cells from breaking down. So, you know, the pretty colored fruit, I say, you know, the purple, the red, the pink, the yellow, the orange, high in antioxidants. So the best case scenario is we're eating, you know, them a couple times a day at least. So say in the morning, we're having some berries with our oatmeal or our cereal. And then maybe later in the day as a snack or with our dinner, we're having a side of a vegetable or a fruit.
Okay.
We're done. We're good.
Sometimes I like even putting berries in my salad.
Perfect. Better yet.
That's a two for one.
It is. Absolutely. And we can't forget our greens.
Right.
So we have
right.
our greens, you know. So how I would counsel you is I would ask, what type of lettuce are you using in your salad? You know, if you're using iceberg or romaine, I would say, oh, well, let's add a lettuce or the green that has more nutritional content. So I was taught iceberg really is fiber and water. So maybe we could do, if you love iceberg, I would say, can we compromise and do half-half, maybe baby spinach or, you know, a mix, you know, something like that to jazz it up a little bit.
I need to think about adding more spinach into my life. I really like it when I eat it. I just have to remember, you know, it's a lot to think about and it takes up mental energy, but it's so important because I feel like if I put some more mental energy into this, you know, give this one of my spoons for the day, then maybe
right.
I'll get a new spoon, you know, maybe I'll I'll get an extra one because I'm taking such good care of myself in terms of my diet. So it does seem like those with mitochondrial disease often have smaller muscle mass. So that can change how one handles their diet, as you said. So It sounds like you can get your muscle strength evaluated from a physical therapist.
Is that?
Okay. And do dietitians typically kind of talk with physical therapists? Like, how does that work? I know that this stuff kind of gets overwhelming, you know, when you don't have these people in your corner, you know, how do you build that up? So finding a physical therapist that will talk to a dietitian?
I've been so lucky working where I have worked that I've always worked as part of a team. So we call it the, you know, interprofessional team, you know, where there's social workers, geneticists, physical therapists, there's speech language pathologists, and of course, physicians, you know, but we all work together. And because we're together in the same physical space, we talk. How is so-and-so doing today? You know, and I have learned, you know, to ask the physical therapist.
Got it.
Not every dietitian probably does ask the physical therapist.
Yeah.
You know, or considers it. It's just not something how we are trained. I think it's something that I have learned being part of the team and knowing that you don't just focus on food. You focus on many other, you know, what else is going on in the person's life as a whole. So, for instance, I look at, you know, what is your living situation? You know, is someone living by themselves? You know, how are you able to feed yourself? Can you afford, what can you afford to eat? I might recommend nutrition supplements to drink. They're pricey.
Yeah.
You know, do you have, if you do live by yourself, do you have a blender? You know, can you make your own nutrition supplements? You know, like make a smoothie. Do you have the time or the energy, to do it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of factors that, that goes into meal planning for yourself. There's a lot of things I take into account, you know, as well as a dietitian, other than muscle strength. Could be how you're breathing. It could be the medications you're taking that could affect your metabolism.
It seems like it would be really important to see a dietitian, even if they're not that well-versed in mitochondrial disease, because there's not that many of you, you know, and there's a lot of us that are not in the Philly area, you know.
Right.
It seems like hopefully one could get some sound advice, maybe not perfect, but, you know, to lead them in the right direction, even if, you know, they're not super familiar with our conditions.
I agree. All dietitians are trained. You know, and we're all trained the same way. And then we specialize.
Right.
But at the core of our training, the most important thing is make sure, number one, you're meeting your nutrition needs, your basic nutrition. Are you getting enough calories? And then of those calories, you know, are the calories in the right proportion? Are you eating all carbohydrates, you know, and you're not getting enough protein? Are you getting some fat in your diet? We need fat, you know, and then specifics. Then the fun part is, how are we going to incorporate those high antioxidant foods, you know, into our meal planning?
Got it. Got it. Okay. So those are three big nuggets that we could take away from this episode, just right there, you know.
Okay.
There's so much more to uncover. I want to kind of switch gears right now and talk about swallowing. I think it affects people over a variety of types of mitochondrial disease. And this concept's actually a big trigger for me, because this was really like the beginning of the end for my mom. And, you know, she took the barium swallow test in the hospital and, you know, was told she couldn't eat. And it's so daunting to think that, you know, your diet is going to be so restricted when already her life was so restricted because of the disease, you know, for so many different reasons. So what, you know, are there foods that we should stay away from when swallowing becomes even slightly more difficult? Like, I wouldn't consider myself having swallowing issues, but if I eat a potato product, any, you know, a thick French fry or part of a baked potato, and it doesn't have any butter or, you know, ketchup or something on it, it does feel a little bit difficult. But still, I wouldn't consider myself having true swallowing issues. So are there foods to stay away from, like what I'm describing? You know, what have you heard? What have you experienced? What can you share with us?
Sure. When I hear someone is having problems swallowing, I kind of do a little detective work. You know, I kind of ask, what I see a theme. Is there a certain consistency of foods? Mm. You know, for you mentioned potatoes.
Yeah.
Are there other foods that are similar to potatoes that are giving you the same type of difficulty in swallowing? If I see a pattern, then I might recommend someone to see a speech language pathologist.
Okay.
And not for speech and language. These are the professionals that evaluate the muscles in your mouth, back of your throat, how you swallow. And I'll never forget when I learned that it takes over like 30 or more muscles. When we swallow, in the back of our throat, there's not just one or two muscles that swallow, there's a lot. So things that are harder to swallow typically are the things that surprise us the most. Liquids. Because liquids, it takes more muscles to, we say, coordinate to hold that sip of a liquid and to swallow it and make sure it's going down our esophagus and not into our lungs. As my grandmother would say, the food's going down the wrong pipe. You know, we want to make sure that the pipe is the esophagus and not into the lungs. So a lot of times people that have a lot of pneumonias, frequent pneumonias, that's another sign or a symptom that food is not going down, you know, our esophagus. And that would be a number one reason for someone to please go get your swallow evaluated. So to get back to answer your question, the harder to swallow foods are the liquidy ones. Mm-hmm. And then the thicker
ones.
Like
a thin liquid.
Yeah.
Water. A thin liquid. Okay.
Water, milk, orange juice, any of the juices. Mm-hmm. That's what we say is a thin liquid. So a thicker liquid could be like a smoothie or a milkshake. Mm-hmm. And then we could get thicker yet, which would be a pudding or a yogurt. Okay.
Okay.
So the liquids, regular food, drink, you know, water, juice, will be harder for our muscles to coordinate to swallow that compared to a spoonful of yogurt would. So I would, you know, I want more information. You know, I would want to know if you saw me, Marcy, I would say, are you coughing or choking? Do you have to clear your, you know, is food getting stuck in the back of your throat? Like, do you frequently have to like cough to like help like get it down, you know?
To create that momentum for the muscles?
Yeah. You know, I would say, please go get it checked. Mm-hmm. And really it's the speech language pathologist. I mentioned that I work with the physical therapist for communication, for muscle strength, but also very important to have a conversation with is, what's the easiest food or drink that you're able to swallow according to the evaluation of the speech language pathologist? They're the ones that tell us what's the best texture of food and the proper consistency for you to swallow and to chew, you know?
Yeah.
If you're having a hard time chewing, is it your muscles could be weak. It's taking you a long time to chew. And this goes into meal planning for me.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if you have more energy or your chewing is better in the morning, then we're going to have more things that are harder to chew, you know, in the morning. And then softer foods, maybe like the yogurt or something similar to that texture later in the day.
Sometimes some of this stuff is like right in front of your face. And when you hear it, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes so much sense. But you don't necessarily think of it on your own, you know? So a potential sign of a slow eater could be weak muscles. I'm a very slow eater. And a couple of my friends who also have CPO have said the same thing. My kids make fun of me. My husband makes fun of me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all done with dinner. They're gone off, you know, not at the table. And I'm still finishing dinner.
Some people just are slow eaters in general, and they don't have muscle weakness, you know?
Yeah, true.
But if you have a condition where you're known to have weaker muscles than the norm, chances are your muscles may be a little weaker in your swallowing. And you just want to make sure and be careful that you're not going to choke.
Yeah. Oh, so much to think about.
Yeah. It's one thing if you take a long time to chew. Fine. The concern is the safety of the swallow.
Yeah.
That is where we need to spend the majority of our attention. You know, once we're done chewing, no matter how long it takes, we want to make sure the food goes down our esophagus.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you do eat, say you're going out to eat at a restaurant or something like that. Again, this is meal planning.
Yeah.
But, or if you do have a finite amount of time, you might want to have a little bit of foods that take longer to chew and then maybe spend, say you have 30 minutes, 10 minutes of those 30 minutes, foods that are going to take longer to chew. And then maybe the rest of the food is going to have a better consistency that's a little bit easier,
mm-hmm.
a lot of energy in the chewing.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll finish up with the rest of the family. Part of things to think about, you know, in terms of meal planning.
Salad is...
Oh, Yeah, salad takes a long time to chew. Salad.
Okay, okay. So it's salad, not just me.
Oh, no.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times people don't think about that. To me, I think of cereal. Cereal to me takes a long time to eat. It's not one of those quick foods you just grab and go in the morning. Cereal, you're sitting down and, you know, it takes you a while. Salad, yes. Salad, too. You know, it's a lot of crunching. A lot of chewing involved.
I always defend myself and say that it's better for my metabolism if I eat slower.
True,
that's true.
That's true.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You can still say it, you know, okay. Better for your metabolism, sure.
Well, that's good to know. At least there's something that, you know, with this condition that kind of slows me down and does help my metabolism. So that's good. There's no foods across the board that are concerning specifically. It's going to be different for every person. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
It is. Okay. It really is. Yes. But remember, we have our core mm-hmm. nutritional needs.
Yeah.
You know, and then based on each person, then we customize. I might suggest try this food, try that food, see how you feel.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If it makes a difference, great. We don't have any standards for mito disease, partly because it's a relatively new, you know, field.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much variety, you know, in the type of conditions.
Hopefully someone who's listening can kind of take some of these nuggets they've learned, schedule an appointment with a dietitian and say, like, I've learned this from a dietitian who is very well-versed in mitochondrial conditions. So, you know, I'm not concerned that you, dietitian out there, are not, because I know what I need, or I know what I, you know, I think I need. So can we kind of build out some plans for me personally, based on what I've learned from, you know, this podcast, from the organization that I trust, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to be able to really kind of break it down so that people aren't listening and thinking, well, I can't meet with Donna. So, you know, how am I going to work this into my life? You know, but
true.
I think that if they could take a couple notes from this episode and bring that to, you know, a dietitian that's respected in their own area, regardless of their mitochondrial disease knowledge, they can be more successful, you know?
Yes.
But the thin liquids, that's very interesting. I wasn't familiar with that.
Yes. Huh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So here's another question. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a mito crash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a term that I see on social media, you know, on Facebook groups for mitochondrial disease. People talk about it. You know, it's a big issue for people in our community. So what to eat when these symptoms come on is, you know, there's a variety of responses.
Yes.
Is there one size fits all when we're talking about kind of crashing out? What do you think?
I think what could be a common thing to think about when it comes to nutrition is what we mentioned before. Make sure you're preventing.
Okay.
Your nutrition is not contributing to the crash.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
Make sure you're getting your minimum nutrition needs and then make sure it's not contributing to your weakness. Now, when a crash comes on, I've worked with some people that when it comes to a crash, to me, their whole gastrointestinal system stops working. You know, they could wake up one morning and all at once their stomach doesn't want to work. Their intestines don't want to work. What do you do? To me, that's very severe in terms of nutrition. And if it happens for an adult, a few days, you're at nutritional, we say, risk. You know, going a few days without getting food in, then I would say, call your doctor. Do we need to get any IV, you know, nutrition? Mm-hmm. If this mm-hmm. goes on for more than a week, you're not getting any food, any drink. Obviously, your weakness, that's very, very, very severe. Now, when it comes to getting a crash and you're just weak, let's think about what we talked about before, like things that are easy to chew. Don't take a lot of work.
Okay. Okay. That's good to
those
think about.
Soft, textured, you know, soft foods. Do we have to make more smoothies? You know, it depends on the person and what's involved. Maybe we might need more putting like, you know, like consistency or mm-hmm. instead of having foods that maybe a, like a piece of a chicken, maybe we might have to cut the pieces of chicken up finer before it goes in our mouth. So the meal preparation itself, maybe it could be, let's see. I think that's what I think of is like make before it, the food even enters your mouth. Do we need to prepare the food so it's the work of chewing and swallowing is done before it enters your mouth? So instead of a chunk of chicken, like if you have a chicken breast and you're cutting yourself off a bite and you're forking it up, maybe we need to think of like chicken that might be shredded, cut into little pieces. So it's less chewing for the person, depending on their level of weakness and their level of, you know, like their fatigue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for some, it might be wise to, you know, spend the extra couple dollars to buy already pulled chicken from the store. That might be something that's worth it. And that's going to be another topic we talk about down the road is, you know, what's worth it. But having something like that handy so that we're not asking you to make the chicken, pull the chicken, you know, do all of those things that might take up a whole spoon in one's day, you know?
True.
So maybe something like that. I've seen them at Aldi. I've seen them at, you know, a variety of more localized grocery stores. You can get them and maybe they'll have a little bit more sodium, but maybe it's worth it. You know, it's so hard to know how to weigh things out, you know, when it comes to diet.
It really is. And, you know, we'll talk about it more when we talk about meal planning, but we could, you know, make things in bulk and freeze.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we talk about that too in terms of meal preparation. So you make one big batch and then you take out a portion for the week and then you freeze it and then take out. It could be your Mito Crash Stash, you know, in your freezer.
Mito Crash Stash. You're knowledgeable and creative. It doesn't get any better. I wish I could clone you and put you, you know, wherever there's someone with mitochondrial disease in the country. You know, because there's so many questions about this stuff. I would love for you to be able to talk to so many of us, you know? There's so much to think about, even just like the fad diets that are constantly evolving, you know, no low carbohydrates. And, you know, I watch people around me, you know, really cut out the carbohydrates, but I don't feel as good when I cut out carbohydrates. You know, I feel like, if anything, I'm a little weaker. Mm-hmm. So it seems like that's something that I should probably ignore, right?
I would say no, you know, then this is where I come in and say, okay, you know, depending on your mitochondrial condition, you might need carbs throughout the day.
Yeah.
So it might be like that slow release of carbohydrate, that slow release of energy that you might need.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could be, you know, before you participate, say you have like, say you're riding a horse. Some people do that for therapy.
Yeah.
You know, like horse, you know, riding therapy. You know, you think you're just sitting on a horse and you're not doing a lot of work, but you are.
You are.
So you might need, you know, a little bit of quick release energy before you sit on that horse.
Right.
So we talk about that in meal planning as well.
Yeah. Well, everyone stick around and keep listening because there's more from Donna later this year. She's going to be back on for a variety of episode topics. I just think she's such a wealth of knowledge. I'm so happy to have her partnering with us right now. So thank you, Donna. Thank you for being here and talking to us about our weakness and how to kind of get around some of this stuff and be smart on the front end. You've been so lovely to talk to today, and I'm really looking forward to having you back for future episodes.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks, Donna. We'll hear from her again. Don't you worry. Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.